From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, out of the office today, so no update of the commodity markets. But I'm a bit of a policy wonk, and I'd like you to hear some questions and some discussions that I've asked of both the Secretary of Agriculture and then of ag economist Carl Zuloff about policy as it relates to the MFP and the future of farm policy in the United States. And we'll do all of that right here on this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
So let me take a moment to set this up, because the discussions you're about to hear look both backwards and forwards. Oftentimes, Carl Zuloff and the ag policy specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, Carl is from the Ohio State in Columbus, discuss policy in terms of what's happening today may be an indication of the kind of farm policies that are created for future use and put into place permanently. So I started thinking about MFP, as did the ag economist, in fact, and whether that can be used in the future in a more permanent function. So here are some thought processes. The President of the United States, Donald Trump, is not a fan of the World Trade Organization, the WTO, and is already hamstringing that organization as it relates to trade by not having the United States approve new people to go into vacant positions. This is important because the WTO is currently the way trade disputes around the planet are settled. With the WTO out of the way, the farm policies that have been in place that have to meet certain WTO guidelines could be changed substantially. That might make way for regular payments that look far more like MFP payments in the future than generally would be allowable under the WTO constraints. The MFP payments are funded by Congress, but the legislation that allows them to funnel through was created decades ago and gave the Secretary of Agriculture broad authority over the economic welfare of agriculture in the United States. Now, under the Trump administration, there has been one change within the CCC authorization, broadened out the ability of the Secretary of Agriculture to use these funds. I asked U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue about any legislative changes that might need to be made in the future.
Good morning, Mr. Secretary. Todd Gleason, University of Illinois Farm Broadcaster. I have a question about MFP, not whether there'll be a 2020 MFP.
Good.
However, those funds come from the CCC. There had to be some legislative action in order to put enough funding in place to pay for the MFP that is now being distributed. Is there another extra legislative action that needs to be taken in a CR or some other place to continue that program if needed?
Well, let me mention the fact that had there had to have been legislative action to create the MFP, there would not have been an MFP. The great news about the Charter Act of 1930s of the Commodity Credit Corporation allows the Secretary to utilize these funds in order for issues like this to support farm programs. And we did that without legislative input, thankfully, because we'd still be talking about that had we done that. But Congress re-ups the money for CCC on an annual basis, so it does have to be appropriation. It has been appropriated. So that's the legislative action, is the appropriation in that way. But no other legislative change differed from the authorities that the Secretary was given in the original Charter Act. So that's good. That's the way we were able to do that. I might mention, Randy, that we did that in 17 at $12 billion. The day after the China talks broke down in late April, the President called me about 6 a.m. that next morning. He said, it doesn't look like we're going to get a deal like we thought we would with China. Bring me a program how we're going to support our farmers in this year as well. Mm-hmm. We did that, and we were able to do that with $16 billion, and he approved that, and thankfully, I think it turned a lot of bottom lines from red to black this year. Mm-hmm. And sort of the joke around the White House is, I don't know if it's jealousy or what, but it's when Sonny comes to the White House, it's not if or when, it's how much.
That was U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue speaking at the National Grain and Feed Association's Country Elevator Conference in Indianapolis in December of 2019. Now, let's take and put this into context again. The MFP is a program that the Trump administration has been using to offset trade imbalances created to bolster the negotiations with China. But those authorities within the CCC are broad and discretionary and could be one of the ways safety net programs are put together for farmers in future farm bills. Here's a conversation I had with Carl Zuloff, an emeritus ag economist from The Ohio State University. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Carl Zuloff. He's an agricultural economist from The Ohio State University and has penned an article for the Farm Doc Daily website, along with Krista Swanson, Gary Schnicki, Jonathan Kappas, and Nick Paulson from here on the University of Illinois campus. It's entitled Assessing Market Facilitation Payments in Hindsight and the Implications for Future Policy. I'm going to make a leap of faith here, Carl, and suggest that you've seen some things that were put into play before that have turned into actual agricultural policy. Can you tell me why you all decided to write this article?
Well, it's always, I think, an important part of both the policy process as well as the academic process to look back at what actually happened. It's, you know, the other part is looking forward and trying to figure out what's going to happen. But by looking backwards, you can come to an understanding of what actually happened and, you know, assess was the impact exactly what people thought it was going to be. If we missed it, why might we have missed it? To lay the foundation for learning going forward.
So tell me about MFP 1, and then maybe you can contrast that to MFP 2 before we get into some more specifics.
Okay. MFP 1 was instituted for the 2018 crop year for a total of 9 commodities: soybeans, cotton, sorghum, wheat, dairy, hogs, corn, fresh sweet cherries, and shelled almonds. The motivation for the MFP program in total, and that's continued through the version 2 for the 2019 crop year, has been to assist farmers and offset some of the negative impacts of the tariff war that has been going on now since the, I'm going to say, it's hard to date exactly, but let's say early 2018. With particularly China, but really a large number of other countries as well. So what the tariff war refers to is that the U.S. Instituted tariffs against a variety of countries, most notably China, for their trade practices, and they retaliated as they can under WTO. It's a perfectly legal retaliation. By increasing tariffs on American commodities. Many of the most affected American commodities have been agricultural commodities, again, particularly to China. So the MFP program is designed to, in a sense, offset and compensate U.S. farmers for damages that they have incurred as part of a broader tariff war. There have been two programs, the MFP what I call version 1.0, was the 2018 crop year for the 9 crops that I discussed a little bit earlier. That has expanded to 40-some crops in 2019, a broader array and a larger amount of payments.
And the expectation is that there will be an MFP 3.0 version, because MFP 2 happened.
I think there's three factors that come together to lead to the expectation. Now, you're doing forecasting here, Todd, so you always have to realize you can easily be wrong. But I think there are three factors that come together that suggest that a 3.0 version would be at least a reasonable consideration is the term that I always use. The first is that there's an ongoing decline in U.S. farm exports in response to the tariff war. Economics is fairly straightforward in that you would expect exports to continue to struggle in an environment because people, other countries, particularly South America and the former Soviet Union countries in this case, have a chance to adjust their production over time, increase production in particular because their demand has increased since our products have become more expensive due to the tariffs. That's the first thing. The second is that there's a very intense ongoing debate about the small refineries exemption from the ethanol mandate. And so these two start to interplay because they both affect demand. And then the third one is the 2020 presidential and congressional elections.
And then can you tell me a little bit about the fundamentals of supply and how they appear to be shifting into the next decade?
Well, the fundamentals of supply, what I would call, first of all, there is the trade adjustment that is going on because of the tariff war. And I think you always have to remember that. And that will continue as long as the tariff war should, the causative factors of the tariff war continue to exist, which is the imposition of tariffs. Obviously, this would change. I should mention, obviously, this would change if we were to sign a treaty, particularly with China, that would remove the tariffs. And so there's a presumption here in our discussion that a agreement with China, at least a total agreement for the removal of all tariffs, doesn't seem likely at the present time, although discussions are ongoing, and there will be significant discussions in the month of October among principal negotiators for both countries. So you need to keep that assumption in mind. But underneath that all, the farm prosperity period of 2007 to 2013 not only provided incentives for U.S. farmers to expand production, they provided incentives for other farmers to expand production around the world. In particular, the incentives were there for the South American producers, Brazil, Argentina, but it extends beyond them in South America, and the former Soviet Union countries of Ukraine, Russia, and Kazakhstan. In the 1970s, the big impact of that farm prosperity was an incentive for Brazil to expand production. In this time, I think it was a big incentive for the former Soviet Union countries to expand production. The other aspect that's going on is that there is a significant movement, still in its infant stages, but definitely growing towards moving toward electric vehicles. That has a real strategic threat for U.S. agriculture because of ethanol production and biofuel production more broadly. The importance of this threat cannot be overstated. For the 2018 crop year, ethanol consumption accounted for almost 10% of all U.S. principal area crop plants. So it's not just a tariff war, Todd, that's going on right now. There are some fundamental strategic issues dealing with supply and demand that is also affecting this market at the present time.
Is it possible this will cause chronic surpluses in the United States?
I think to say that they will happen is an overstatement. To say that they would not happen is also an overstatement. I think in the terminology that I like to use is you cannot rule out a return to chronic surpluses in this situation. If these factors evolve in the way that I described previously, U.S. demand is likely to shrink, and that would require a shrinking of the sector in some way, shape, or form, either through the market or through government programs. We, of course, had significant chronic surpluses in the U.S. really all the way through from the 1930s until 1985. So really the last 20 years, have been sort of an exception to a century-long trend towards chronic surpluses. So it is, I'm not so much would not make the prediction that we would return to chronic surpluses, but I think farmers, agribusiness people, and others who deal with the farm sector need to put this on their radar screen, need to consider what it would mean for their industry, and at least to put it into their scenario processes.
What are the policy implications of those potential surpluses, along with the current spending from the federal government level on agriculture, including the MFP programs and all of the Title I programs, for the discussions in the next Farm Bill?
Well, there's two factors going on here that impact the policy side of things. The first is that there's a well-established tendency in U.S. policy that anytime we do ad hoc policy for anybody, Todd, not just for farmers, and what I mean by ad hoc is an individual situation. The MFP program is an individual situation. It's a policy that was created to deal with an unexpected event, in this case, the tariff war. So it's called an ad hoc policy. In other words, a policy to this particular issue. There's a tendency on the part of those who are recipients of an ad hoc policy, in this case farmers, to try to annualize that ad hoc policy to capture those payments, in part because the impact of the ad hoc factor continues, as in the tariff war. And so people like to be at least compensated in part for the damage that's been done. So this would be called annualizing the ad hoc payments. This is a well-established thing. We've seen this in agricultural policy in recent years. The creation of this countercyclical program was a result of an ad hoc program in the late 1990s. Crop insurance routinely creates new products to deal with ad hoc disaster assistance that Congress has created. So we see this all the time. And so I would expect this also to happen here, in part because trade continues to struggle in this particular environment right here. The other thing is that if we do return to chronic surpluses, we would expect to see a very large increase in spending on farm programs. In particular, you would at least look initially at the price loss program, the PLC program, for an increase in spending. And that increase in spending was then, in the past, when we've had big increases in spending on farm programs, that has triggered a consideration of changes in farm programs to adjust to the increase in the spending. So I think there are two things to watch in this environment. One is, how do farm organizations react to MFP? Do they try to annualize it? History suggests that they will. And the second is, what happens to the level of spending, particularly what happens to prices as we move forward? If prices start to really decline, spending will start to increase, and that will build political pressure.
And you believe that pressure could result in more conservation programs, whole farm set-aside programs? What kinds of things might take a place?
Well, there would be a number of things to watch for how we would deal with chronic surpluses in general and an increase in spending resulting from chronic surpluses in particular. One would be that we would have serious discussions about returns to land set-asides. Land set-asides were part of foreign policy from the 1930s until the 1996 Farm Bill removed them. It would be a co-payment that farmers would have to make. In order to have access, for example, to PLC and to ARC, you would have to set so many acres aside, and you would do that on an annual year. Another way to do it, and I think there would be a lot of appeal to this for a lot of non-farm members, is to increase the size of the conservation programs, to increase the size of CRP, to move to some more maybe creative conservation program. For example, a 2 or 3 year set aside for building healthy soils, interfacing it with this with the concern over organic matter, healthy soils, those sorts of things, the role of cover crops. Another thing that we could do, of course, is we could go in and actually change the programs themselves, redesign them. And one of the things that I think could come up in this environment, because MFP 2.0 is actually the largest expansion in farm programs since World War II in terms of number of commodities. There are 16 commodities in MFP 2.0 for 2019 crops that are not in Title I of the Farm Bill. And these include alfalfa hay, which is a very large acreage crop. But right now, farm programs cover just a little bit under 80% of the total acres in the country anyway, principal crop acres. And so it wouldn't be that big of a step from current policy to move towards a whole farm policy to address the issue of the impact of tariffs, which extend beyond beyond the traditional farm policy issues. So, and the way to do that would be to go to a whole farm or a whole crop farm policy. And so I think we could see potential discussion of exactly what form of support should commodities get to. So again, just to summarize, I think there are three things to watch. First is whether we go back to annual set-aside. Second is whether we increase conservation programs and the use and the putting of land into conservation programs. And the third is, do we actually get into a discussion about redesigning farm programs for the current environment, not for the past environment?
Would this be a cheaper option?
The whole farm program would probably be it would be a less expensive option than to go to trying to support individual crops. And the reason it would be, I'm not sure it's cheaper than our current policy, Todd, because you're adding more commodities. But it would be cheaper than going to a commodity by commodity expansion. And the reason is that if you go to a whole farm program, then you're looking at a whole crop farm program is more likely. If you're looking at the entire income from the farm, and we all know that crops move in different ways in years. Some have increases in income, some have decreases in income, and so they will offset one another, reducing the total outlay that you would need relative to an individual crop program. So from the perspective of potential expenditures, yes, it would result in a cheaper program.
That's Carl Zuloff, ag economist from The Ohio State University. He, along with Gary Schnitke, Krista Swanson, Jonathan Kappas, and Nick Paulson, have authored an article under the Gardner Policy Series on the FarmDoc Daily website called Assessing Market Facilitation Payments in Hindsight and Implications for Future Policy. You can read it online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.